Hello, crackheads. You're listening to Paranormal Cracktivity. I'm Justin.
And, of course, again, I am Dreek.
Dreek, how are you doing today?
How am I good? How am I doing? I'm good.
How are you good?
I just built a whole fence, almost.
Except oh, how pickets. Exciting. How exciting.
Yeah, shout out to Justin. Not you, Justin, but I have another friend, Justin. He came like with his power tools, and he just started just drilling wood, and I was like, perfect.
Wow, shout out to Justin.
Shout out to Justin. So yeah, my body's aching.
Well, are you drinking anything tonight?
I am not, but I had some really good food, actually.
Oh, what did you have?
Ow!
That sounds delicious.
Stop, please. It was like beans and beef, basically. Like a little stew. Oh, yum.
That sounds good.
And like some cornbread, too.
Well, I'm having a hazy IPA tonight.
That sounds delicious. Delectable.
Yeah, yeah. I'm having a hazy IPA tonight, and it's delicious. It's Sierra Nevada, so... Yeah. I also had a great weekend this week. Did you do anything exciting this weekend?
I began the process of building my fence.
That's exciting.
That took my whole weekend.
That's very exciting. I went foraging and hiking in the Nisene Marks State Park here in California, and then I went to a pumpkin patch and got lost in a corn maze. So that was fun also.
Oh, that sounds so much fun. Just getting lost. Yeah. Actually, that's not fun. Like the idea. Okay.
You don't think it's fun? The corn, like, just corn everywhere. What could be better?
The children in the corn.
The darkness. We couldn't see anything. It was pitch dark.
So what are you doing today, Justin, for your case?
Would you want to guess?
Do I want to guess? Is it a cryptid?
That's a good question. Hold on. Let me check. Oh no, it's not a cryptid.
Is it about a celebrity?
No, I don't think so.
Wait, let me rephrase that question. Is the killer, I'm assuming, is the killer a famous killer?
No. Okay, but you're on the right track. You're on the right track. It's a... You ready?
H.H. Holmes.
No, it's a serial killer.
H.H. Holmes was a serial
killer. H.H. Holmes is coming. You know what? Maybe H.H. Holmes is going to be like my Christmas case or something. I'm going to have that for you guys soon. I promise, because it's been teased for so long, but...
And that is a great idea.
No, yeah, but no, today I'm covering... I'm here to bum everybody out again. I'm covering a serial killer, and his name is Andre Rigo. Have you heard of him?
No.
I had not heard of him either. He's not very well known, as far as I can tell. Before we get started, Andre Rigo is Slavic. And so I don't know how to pronounce a lot of these names. I could have tried, but I feel like, honestly, it would be more offensive if I tried to pretend like I knew how to pronounce Slavic than to just do my best. So I'm just going to do my best, and I don't know how to pronounce most of these, so I'm sorry if it's offensive. And so
blanket
the
quote.
First blanket quote. Oh, and while we're at it, trigger warning. This is a brutal case. So just everybody listening, if you don't want to hear about certain situations involving rape or murder or graphic details, don't listen to this episode.
Does it involve children?
Only one. But it's not. We'll get into it. We'll get into it. It's all bad. But so to start out, we're going to do some quick history. Quick history with Justin. Andre's heritage is Slavic. So I'm going to give you a quick rundown of that history to better understand where these people came from, because I was quite ignorant to their origin. Early Slavic peoples living in Central Europe are referenced in ancient Roman literature as early as 1st and 2nd centuries. and around the 5th and 6th centuries, they migrated east and settled in lands that had been abandoned by Germanic tribes. So we're talking like 600, 700s is when these people were living in Europe. Now, without getting too caught up in the imperialistic bullshit of it all, the Slavs were ruled by a handful of empires and such, like the Kingdom of Bohemia and the Habsburg Monarchy, which, I mean, you know, as everybody was, because, you know, that's how it was in those times. I feel like it's just important to mention these because colonialism has such a severe cultural and economic impact on those victimized. The Slavs may have developed a very different way of life without the integration of those influences, but the marginalization of those people is a major contributor to their instability and vulnerability, which we'll get into a little bit more now. In 1867, the Habsburg monarchy became the dual monarchy of Austria-Hungary. Due to their differences, and largely caused by the end of World War I, which they were on the wrong side of, I'm afraid, the so-called dual monarchy collapsed, and so in 1918, Czechoslovakia proclaimed independence. Does that make sense?
For the most part, yes.
Yeah, okay, so all you really need to know is the people got passed around, you know, different things happened. 1918, Czechoslovakia has proclaimed independence. And so this fresh nation has a rocky start, but they held it together up until Hitler invaded and occupied the country in 1938. And Czechoslovakia is a main point in World War II, a main point of contention, although the Allies honestly didn't really do anything to protect them. So the government was forced to operate in exile. They had to leave the country because Hitler was occupying, and they organized to fight alongside the Allies. Finally, in 1944, Czechoslovakia was liberated by Soviet troops, supported by Czech and Slavic resistance. The country was left in ruins by the Nazis, and all but abandoned by the rest of the world. By 1948, the Communist Party took power in the 1948 Czechoslovak coup d'etat. And that, ladies and gentle days, brings us to our story. So Andrei Rigo was born on December 17th, 1955, in Modra, Czechoslovakia. He's a Cancer sun and a Capricorn moon. And I was unable to find many records about his birth, which is not surprising now that we know the history of his ancestors. So there's almost no information about Andrei's family, but it could also be from the judicial systems keeping that information from the public, which they do more often in Europe. So from the timeline, we can see that Andrei's parents lived through the First and Second World Wars in Czechoslovakia. Does that make sense?
Yes. Even though we don't have any information about them, we still can figure out that they lived there during that time.
Exactly. That's why I gave you all that history, is to understand that, like, I don't even have their names. I don't know how many children they have. I don't know what they did for a living. They were just living in this very turbulent time where there might not have been any records. Czechoslovakia became overtaken by the Communist Party, like I said earlier, in 1948, and then Andrei was born in 1955. So it was in the midst of the communist regime that Andrei was born. Most sources say that at the age of 14, Andrei was put into a youth corrective institution. Later, he and his siblings were taken from their mother following their father's arrest and put into an orphanage where they stayed for 1 year. Their father died during a burglary, and I was not able to determine whether he was the burglar or the burgled. But like I said, he was arrested, so, you know, who knows?
I've never heard that word before ever in my life.
You heard it here first, folks. So later on, Andrei says that his parents were good to him and that they didn't beat him, for whatever that's worth. Obviously, we can't just take his word for it, but that's all we have. So, as an adult, Andrei was short and ugly. I saw some pictures of him on these Slovakian news sites, and I'm going to make Dreek look at them now. So I'm going to share my screen with you. There we go.
Aw, some of us never had a chance. He just didn't have it.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, he just didn't have it, y'all. I heard it here.
He just didn't have it.
You heard There's it here a little... first, folks.
You heard it here first, folks. Oh, okay. So for everybody listening, Andre has broad features and a very stern demeanor. Like he just farted and it smells really bad, but he's got to act like it doesn't. His hair is dark and receding, so he has a huge forehead. And yeah, that's Andre. Anyways, Andre entered his military the military service, which is where he met his first wife. However, the two split up when Andre returned to Bratislava. Here he worked as a fireman in the boiler room for the Pravda newspaper, as well as two other hospitals, and then he worked at the Hotel Carlton. Andre was arrested and convicted 11 times prior to committing his first murder, which were mainly home burglaries, continuing the family business, as you can see. In 1989, communism had run its course in Slovakia, and the regime crumbled. And someone dropped an iron curtain or something like that. So now Andre was free to leave the country and take his crimes international.
Woohoo!
On December 9th, 1989, Andre was released from prison in Czechoslovakia, and he traveled to Vienna, where he bought a fake Yugoslavian passport under the name Ikik Nido. Ikik Nido. He traveled to Germany, meeting his brother there. So, do you know what it means to ask a country for asylum?
Yes, kind of.
You do?
Maybe.
Okay. I wasn't completely aware of what that meant, so I searched it on Google and I copy and pasted it into my document. So, an asylum seeker is someone who has fled their home in search of safety and protection in another country because he or she cannot obtain protection in their home country. They seek it elsewhere.
Okay, yeah. That's what I was thinking it was.
Yeah. So, Andre goes to Bavaria in Germany with his fake ID and asks the country of Germany for asylum. And so, obviously, they were like, Nido, no way. And so, he was sentenced to 2 years in prison for forging documents, which he served in Bad Reichenhall. Oh, yeah, and then the next part that I read in my sources say that after he was released from Bad Reichenhall, Andre was escaped from a refugee camp. I'm not sure what that means.
If you're a refugee, then why would you escape the refugee camp?
Like, I don't know how he became a refugee when he was in Germany unless he, like, went back to Czechoslovakia but he wasn't, like... All he did, he served his time. I don't know. He served his time for the fake ID, right? I didn't understand that. So I just wanted to include it. After this, he traveled to Munich. And this is where we get into the bad stuff. You ready?
No.
I need some more beer. Hold on. Okay. Before I start this, all of these or most of these victims, only the last name is only given with one initial because I think it's to help them remain anonymous. Like I was saying earlier with like European judicial records, I think they keep them from the public more so than in the United States.
Okay.
So just to keep that in mind. So on the evening of June 7th, 1990, Andre broke into the apartment of Helena S., 40 years old, through a partially open window. It is assumed from the evidence and his account of the night that he entered the home with the intention of burglarizing her, but was surprised to see her in the home. And this does not sit right with me, for the record. After being surprised by Helena, Andre hit her on the head with a 5.5-pound or 2.5-kilogram metal pipe. He wrapped the upper part of her body with a blanket and raped her corpse, before tossing the pipe out of the bedroom window. So that's really bad. Really bad. I found some sources that said that he stole valuables from the apartment, and other sources said that he took absolutely nothing. So here's where I want to go back and say where I said, like, it doesn't sit right with me that where he said that he was intending to burglarize her, because like later on in the accounts he talks about how he like stood outside people's apartments and watched them, and also he was entering her house in the middle of the night, so how was he going to be surprised by her? Like, wouldn't you expect to find somebody sleeping in their home in the middle
Absolutely.
Of the night? Yeah, so I don't buy it. I don't think he was surprised to see her. I don't think he even went into the home with the intention of stealing from her. I think he went in with the intention to kill her. That's just my hot take. But what do you think?
I don't know what I think. I think I need to get more of a pathology on this guy before I make a conclusive statement. So let's hear some more about the horrible things he did.
Good point, good point. As far as we know, this was the first murder, so there are some things that we know of, and there are some things that were different in this than the other ones that we'll see as we go along. So that was on June 7th, 1990. On July 31st, 1990, he broke into the apartment of Ilka Z, who was 27 years old, during the night and murdered her in the same way with a metal pipe. Ilka was also found with a stab wound in her neck from a screwdriver that Andre had inflicted, possibly while raping and sodomizing the corpse. After covering the body, he stole a few things from the house, including a golden necklace. The pipe used to murder Ilka was found at the crime scene, along with a man's sock. So this is where we see a couple different things that happened, right? Because he, first of all, he mutilated the corpse, and he stole some expensive jewelry this time, and he left behind a sock at the scene.
On purpose?
I don't know if it was on purpose. I don't know. I think it could have been on purpose. It could have been him taunting the police, because as we'll see, he most likely wore socks on his hands to not leave evidence behind. So it was probably him saying like, "Ha, you're not going to catch me," you know? He just didn't care. He just took the sock off once it was finished and left it there.
Wouldn't, like, your finger juice be in the sock?
That's a good point. I don't know. We'd have to ask somebody, a scientist. I have to ask a finger juice scientist. If there are any finger juice scientists that are listening, please email us at paranormalcreativitypodcast@gmail.com.
And subscribe to our Patreon.
And subscribe to our Patreon. No, if you're a doctor, don't subscribe to our Patreon. You can send us a check directly.
Absolutely.
We'll work that out. anyway, back to this awful story. So in October, Andre left Munich and went to Amsterdam, which is in the Netherlands, to visit his sister. And on September 27th, 1990, he broke into the apartment of Maria van der W., who was 58 years old, and murdered her in her sleep with a 12-pound or 5.5-kilogram stone. He violated her body in the same way as the other victims before stealing a camera, a wristwatch, and two boxes of coins, among the other things. He also drank a bottle of Slivovitz that he found in the kitchen. Ick, first of all, drinking at a crime scene after you've crimed. But I searched Slivovitz, and it is a brandy made from damson plums, which sounds lovely.
It actually does sound lovely.
And so, like, I noticed that I said that he treated her the same way as the other victims, but I didn't see any evidence to suggest that he mutilated her body. He could have. Like I said, information on this case was a little bit lacking. I mean, I didn't find any coroner's reports or anything like that. But as far as I know, she was brutalized in the same way as the first victim and the second victim. So this is, he leaves again. He leaves Amsterdam and goes back to Slovakia. He goes back to Bratislava the very next day after committing this murder in October. And on October 6th, 1990, he killed Terezia R., who was 88 years old, while she slept inside a retirement home. He bludgeoned her with his fists. Yeah, very brutal. The retirement home was missing prayer books, a rosary, and 400 Czech koruna, which I think is about $16. But I'm not sure about that. The police also found some Dutch coins and cigarette butts underneath a teres, which were later determined to contain Andre's DNA, but at the time couldn't be used to determine that. So again, we see him having this reckless behavior. He just doesn't care, you know. He just doesn't care. He's smoking cigarette butts. I didn't see any information to say that Terezia was brutalized the same way as the other victims, and that might just be because she was the oldest victim and sources didn't want to report that. But I can't confirm or deny any.
Well, we know he beat her up.
We know that he literally punched her to death, which is just absolutely awful. So, a little bit later on the night of January 2nd, 1991, Andre broke into the room of Anna P., 40 years old, and her teenage son, Uri N., 14 to 16 years old. Anna had emigrated to Switzerland with her husband and son 9 years prior. She and Uri were visiting Bratislava for New Year's, and they were sleeping next to each other in a dormitory when Andre crushed their heads with a wooden stick. Evidence suggests that Anna tried to protect her son during the attack. Her corpse was also violated in the same way as the other women. Not too long after that, on January 9th, 1991, Andre broke into the apartment of Yana B., 31 years old, through a ventilation window above the door. Yana is a Slavic artist and a karate practitioner. She was attacked by Andre around 2:30 a.m. while sleeping in her apartment on Kurutsvova Street in Bratislava. She was hit twice on the head from the wooden shaft of a hoe that Andre had stolen from outside. She jumped from the bed and defended herself with a piece of broken wood. When Andre ran to the door, she threw a chair at him. In the kitchen, they wrestled, and he wrestled her onto a hot gas stove, where she got burned before falling to the ground, when Andre stood up and started punching her in the head. So Yana grabs this fucker by the balls and gives him a tight squeeze. And so here I have a quote from Yana. "I didn't have time to think. I had to hit immediately. The guy ran to the door and he unlocked it from the inside. I threw a chair at him. He snorted and threw me in the kitchen on the gas stove. The skin on my legs and stomach started to crack. We both then fell to the ground in a silent struggle. He stood up and beat me on the head. All I could do was grab him by the natural. At that moment, he tried to gouge out my eye. I don't remember if he roared or not. He ran away. I didn't run after him. I was glad he was gone." Hats off to Yana. Wow.
I want to be like you when I grow up.
Wow. Seriously. So, Yana got a good look at Andre. She survived. She was the only survivor. Spoiler alert. Yana got a good look at Andre's face, and she also said that his pants were hand-sewn in the crotch. For whatever that's worth. Apparently that was important later on. Following the attack, she ran to her neighbor for help and needed several weeks to recover, but she decided to stay in her flat despite Andre not being caught yet. And when she was asked why, she replied, "Why should I move? Where is it safer? In Petrakla?" I said that wrong. "Rigo is not interesting to me. I have no trauma from him. I don't feel anything. He doesn't mean anything to me. I don't want to talk about him, read about him, or know anything about him." Some sources say that she got a dog.
After that?
Yep.
Mine is right here licking me.
Oh, buddy. Sweet buddy.
No. Go sit down.
Beauregard. Beauregard.
Maybe if I ignore him.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling like sad.
Yeah, this is pretty heavy. We're more than halfway through. It's not going to get too much worse. I just thought we should take a breather. I really need to drink some more of this beer. I'm not going to be drunk enough by the time this is done. Hold on. Okay. You ready? You ready to get more bummed out?
Yes.
All right.
Ready for the bum.
So, about 3 months later, Andre murdered Helena N., who was 79 years old, with a piece of concrete. And that's all the information that I have on that one. But that brings us to July 14th, 1991. Andre broke into the apartment of Henrietta O, who was 22 years old. She was playing guitar late into the night. Sheds a tear for kindred spirit.
Absolutely.
He murdered her, violated her, and robbed her apartment. Henrietta died 18 days after the attack, so she didn't actually die in the home. She survived for a little while, and then she died in the hospital. A really sad part of this victim story is that Henrietta's grandmother was sleeping in another room of the apartment, but she was almost totally deaf, and so she didn't hear any of the attack taking place.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So on March 4th, 1992, Andre was out seeing a movie with his girlfriend on Sankova Street.
This dirtbag has a girlfriend?
Yeah. Yeah, he has a girlfriend, and he had two wives previously.
Ew.
Yeah, gross. So he was out with his girlfriend on Sankova Street, and they were seeing a movie. As they were riding the bus home, he tells her that he has something to take care of, and he hops off the bus. After this, he breaks into a home on Obchodna Street in the center of Bratislava, where Matilda Yu, 67 years old, was sleeping soundly. Matilda was the last victim to be murdered and violated by Andre. And that is the end of his serial killing career. I believe that's 9 victims.
So he was with his wife. He left his wife.
His girlfriend.
Oh, girlfriend. I apologize. He left his girlfriend and just immediately went to go violate another woman.
Yep. He had an itching for the killing, itching for the necrophilia.
Why didn't he kill her?
Because that's his girl.
Like,
who's he going to see a movie with if he kills her?
Hopefully no one.
Okay, so we're almost done. We're on to the arrest and his trial. So that same day, on March 4th, 1992, Andre was arrested by the Slavic criminal police only hours after committing the murder. And he was arrested in the Hotel Carlton on Hvitslavovo Square in Bratislava, where he was working as a cloakroom attendant. According to former investigator Josef Vakalek, he was still in a trance, like a snake who just swallowed its prey. There were traces of blood on his shoes and trousers, and inside his locker there were jewels belonging to the victim. End quote. Andre was also not wearing socks at the time of his arrest.
That's nasty. Shocked.
Yeah, where do you think those socks were? So not only is there finger juice, but there's also toe juice. We're gonna have to get a hold of two scientists. If you're a toe juice scientist, please email us.
I completely forgot you told me that this dude wears socks on his hands. Mm-hmm. When he commits the crimes.
Mm-hmm. So,
he's nasty and he's dumb?
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, that was his arrest. And now on to the trial. Andre never pleaded guilty. And in his defense, you ready? In his defense, he claimed that the blood was syrup.
Lies.
He claimed that the sperm found on the victims was placed there by a worker at a strip club to frame him.
Lies.
He said that his footprints and cigarette butts found at the balcony were there because he was having a wee.
Girl,
and that he was looking through those girls' windows because he was just curious.
Ew.
And why did he have all that jewelry that belonged to the victims? Because women just give Andre Rigo their jewelry as gifts.
Lies.
That checks out, right?
Lies.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're disgusting.
Yeah.
You're ugly.
Yeah. So during the trial, Yana B., the only survivor, testified, and she went to court wearing a wig because she didn't want to be noticed. The criminal police of Germany Netherlands, and Czechoslovakia all worked together to nab this jingle blaster. Evidence of the 9 murders and the brutality of the crimes was presented with DNA, blood, and semen analysis, along with 194 witness testimonies.
194.
That is a lot of evidence. Andre sat rigidly and showed no emotion as his crimes were read to the court. On December 7th, 1994, the city court of Bratislava sentenced 39-year-old Andre Rigo to life imprisonment after a trial that lasted 10 days. Swift justice.
How do people like this exist?
I don't know. On February 27th, 1996, let's see, that's 2 years after his initial, or almost 2 years after his initial trial, Andre appealed his sentence with absolutely no proof. And the following day, his appeal was denied, and he was sentenced again to life imprisonment by the Supreme Court of Slovakia.
I would have did that too. Next.
Yeah. He served several years in Klava prison, and then was transferred to Leopoldov prison. And here is where we get into the psychology. This part is really interesting. This is almost the last bit. So, according to the court-appointed psychologist, Antoine Heretic, he does not accept any social norms. He is lacking empathy and behaves very impulsively. At the same time, he is a schizoid personality, unable to create relationships with others. He has strange thoughts and hobbies, and he is a loner. He is a combination of schizoid and antisocial psychopath, creating a very dangerous type of criminal. End quote. And that's just a whole big pot of bad shit, so.
I don't like it at all.
No. Josef Vakalek, the investigator, says he had a low IQ and seldom talked. So you called it?
I did? What did I call?
You said he was stupid.
Oh. Yay me.
So he has had a low IQ and very seldom talked. According to Daniel Blasco from Ilava Prison, Andre is aggressive and difficult to communicate with because he rarely speaks in coherent sentences. He says that his chances for correction are zero. And so this is where I decided to include the MO, the modus operandi, which we hear very frequently about serial criminals. Like you were asking about earlier, his patterns of what led up to his attack. These are the patterns that are listed in all of the sources, and they're not all consistent from what I can tell of what led to his conviction. Like we were saying earlier, like with the first victim, it can be different as a killer is developing their patterns and their habits and whatnot. But like from what I could tell, most of these occurred at all of the crime scenes, regardless of whether or not I mentioned them earlier. So, for example, like socks were found at many of the crime scenes. Mm. Cigarette butts were also found at many of the crime scenes. But as far as his modus operandi, that is more relating to things like he would sneak into apartments usually through a window, and it was always very late in the evening / early morning hours, and he would always find the weapon at the site, and he would pick women who were sleeping alone and beat them to death with whatever weapon he found at the site. And then after killing the victim, he would cover them up and violate them in the ways that I mentioned earlier that I'm not going to keep mentioning over and over again. And then, like I said, he smoked cigarette butts and left cigarette butts on the floor at most of the scenes, and he robbed the victims. So that's stuff that happened all across the board that he did to pretty much all of his victims, with the exception of maybe the first or so.
So like his patterns, like his routines of when he does these horrific crimes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Makes sense?
It does make sense.
Good. Good. Right. And most of the sources that I found, they were listed off. And some of the things were inconsistent, so I said that a little bit differently. So I don't know if it makes any, if it made any sense. I'm probably going to listen to it later and think that it didn't make any sense. But we'll see. Anyways, so he was sentenced to prison. He's been serving his, since we last left off, in 1996. He appealed his sentence and he was resentenced to prison, and now he was transferred to Leopoldov prison. And then in 2000, Andre's mother died. And Andre says that this was the first time in his life that he has cried. Boo-hoo.
Aww.
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 It's a lying dickhole. Mm. And so in 2018, Andre applied for parole. And after serving 25 years in prison, he was denied. Of course.
Oh.
Which now brings us to 2021. In 2021, Andre was reported to have been suffering from heart issues from Alzheimer's. And then on June 14th, 2022, Andre died of heart failure in Trenčín prison, to which we say, rest in distress.
Period, Pooh. You out.
And that is the end of my story. That is Andre Rigo.
I've never heard of him.
Yeah, I did some searching. I listened to a couple of podcasts on him, but there's just really not that much information, and which is surprising because he was very prolific. Nine victims, 8 murders. And I've actually found another source that said there may have been one other connected to him, a similar MO. I didn't include that one because it wasn't confirmed. But so, potentially 10 victims.
He gotta go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very sick. Very sick individual. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't suppose you can read Slovakian.
I can't read English, sweetheart.
Well.
Leave it.
Exactly. Leave it. is that it? Are we good? Are you done?
I'm done, Justin.
We're done. We're good. We're good. We're done.
We're all happy. Thank you so much for listening to Paranormal Cracktivity.
Thank you so much for listening. I'm sorry to bum you guys out again and again.
Let's see. What is something that we can like end on that's really happy?
It's really happy. I mean, you've been... Bodhi's been licking you basically the whole time that we've been recording, which is something that the listeners will find out right now. So I think that's good. That's pretty exciting.
He knows that I do not like when he licks me. It's an ick. I don't like it. If you let your dog lick on you, that's fine. I can't do it.
I let Sadie lick on me. Mm-mm. Sadie's sweet. Yeah, she's sweet in and out, inside and out, so she can lick on me if she wants to.
I think I'm slightly allergic to dogs.
Oh, interesting.
Or maybe I'm a drama queen. No, I'm not.
No. That couldn't be it. That couldn't be the problem.
Never the problem.
Okay, well, with that, I think that's a good place, a good happy spot to end on. thank you guys so much. Oh, yeah. We need to do our plugs, our butt plugs. Thank you guys so much. follow us on Instagram at Paranormal Cracktivity Podcast. Email us paranormalcracktivitypodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to our Patreon at Paranormal Cracktivity Podcast. Find everything at our website, paranormalcracktivitypodcast.com. If you celebrate, have a blessed Samhain, a plentiful harvest, and a happy Halloween. And don't smoke crack.
Go kiss a baby. Those are cute.
Don't do that. Anyways, have a good crack. Have a good shit.
Quack. shoe.